Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, October 12, 2018. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. How are you, Andrew?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Awesome. I'm glad you're here. Dave Hamilton, I'm glad you are here too. Thanks for joining me.
I am glad I am virtually here as well. Thanks for having me.
And it's great to have both of you here. We might as well just hop right into the first topic, because my guess is we're going to have a few questions that we'll have to work through. Dave, I wanted you here today because I wanted to get an update on the state of Wi-Fi mesh, because I know that there's new things that are coming out. There have been updates to some products, and Wi-Fi mesh is becoming a lot more prominent. So I guess it's update time.
It is. Yeah. So, right. For those who, starting at the beginning, very briefly, mesh, at least in the consumer sense, is when we talk about Wi-Fi mesh, what we mean is having multiple access points in your home, Wi-Fi access points in your home, to with the main purpose of expanding your Wi-Fi coverage, eliminating dead spots, without adding a lot of management headache, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of these, you know, what I'll call mesh 1.0 products have done, which is like an Eero or, you know, Linksys's Velop or Amplify from Ubiquiti and TP-Link's Deco. There's tons of them. They are essentially kits that you can buy that have multiple devices in them, and they're different form factors for different homes and layouts and all that stuff. And you buy it and you set it up, and then you have one interface. It's either an app or a web interface, or sometimes both, where you control everything. And when you change the Wi-Fi name or password on one of them, it changes it everywhere in your house. You don't see multiple Wi-Fi networks throughout your home, even though there are multiple networks. They're all named the same and all that stuff. So that's when we talk about mesh in the consumer sense, in terms of what we use in our homes and even small offices, that's what we mean. And okay, mesh 1.0 has been blissful for so many of us, especially those of us that created what I call quasi mesh in the past, with, you know, either multiple routers or routers and Wi-Fi extenders, which didn't used to work, but then got better. And really the whole foundation of all this is 802.11ac. Right. The 5 gigahertz networks that run at super high speeds compared to others. And that really is what opened the door for both mesh and Wi-Fi extenders to work really well, because you could have devices that were far away from each other, distance speaking, and still move enough bandwidth between them that all of these mesh points can just communicate wirelessly, and you don't need to put Ethernet in your walls to get this done. So, all that said, we are now entering what I'm calling mesh 2.0, right? Where we've got the basics of this down. Now it's time to start looking at some of the things where mesh didn't quite work in the first place. And one of those is, like, the most common is, I have a router that I like or that I cannot get rid of, and I also want mesh, right?
Sure, I can see where that would be a thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, you either have, as I said, a router that you really like. You bought some, you know, high profile or high power gaming router, or you like me, the Synology router, because it has lots of features. But you also want mesh, and or you have a router from your ISP that you simply cannot easily, you know, detach from your network. You know, Verizon Fios customers are sort of the prime example there, but there's others, right? Where mm-hmm. you know, this is the router you will have because of the way your internet service comes into your home. And then you also want mesh, and because, you know, oftentimes your internet comes into your home in a corner, and, you know, you want to work in the other corner, right? So with mesh 2.0, there are lots of devices coming out, and I'm going to call them, the mesh vendors are going to hate me for this, but you'll appreciate it, I think. I'm going to call them really smart extenders, okay?
Because I get why they don't want you to say that.
They don't want me to say that, right? But thankfully, you know, they don't employ me, so I can say whatever I want. Because that's really what these things become. But the really smart part is the important piece. For example, Netgear just last week announced what they are calling Nighthawk Mesh, which is simply a firmware update to things that were previously what we'll call smart extenders. So you could buy an extender and you would set it up and it would have a different network name and it wouldn't ever even communicate back to your main router. But, you know, it would in terms of getting internet signal, but it wouldn't tell your main router anything and there would be no coordination between the devices. But you'd have these two networks in your house that you could use and, you could connect to the other one when you're in a dead spot. With this Nighthawk Mesh, which is available for a lot of their extenders, but not all of them, it's just a firmware update. It is free. And it adds what experientially becomes far more like a full mesh solution. It makes it so that it extends your network, yes, but it uses the same SSID so that you're getting the same, you don't have to think, your devices don't have to think, right? You tell it to connect once to your network, and no matter where you are, it's connecting to this. But they're also doing some smart things using some protocols like 802.11k, which allows the devices to coordinate with each other so mm-hmm. that it's handing you to the right access point depending on what's going on with the network and all of this very cool stuff. So there's that. Then yesterday, Synology had their big event in New York where they announced a product very similar to that. They call it the Mesh Router 2200, MR2200, which allows you to add their meshing capabilities and some of their features of the router, like Cloud Station, which is like running your own Dropbox and that sort of thing, to your network. And if you happen to have a Synology router, then that can be your one management interface for all of these things. So upgrading old hardware so that this new hardware, can work well with it without you having to change, right?
That's actually really smart and a great way to keep people on whatever product you have already sold them.
That's right. Well, and also, if you go and you say, okay, well, I have a Netgear router, but I want to add some meshing stuff. And so I want to buy, this Synology thing because it adds some features that I have that I want, but also adds this mesh. Okay, well, great. Now you've got, a mesh point or two from Synology in your house. Now, when you have to replace your Netgear router, of course, Synology's hope is, well, wait a minute. I like the way these other Synology devices work. Now I'm going to backdoor that into buying a Synology router, right? And so this all gets really interesting. And it just keeps going from there. Linksys just announced some, different form factors for their Velop devices so that you can have them in different places. Amplify from Ubiquiti just announced what they call their Amplify Instant, which is a smaller, less expensive mesh starter kit to get going. And we really are. We're in what I'm calling Mesh 2.0.
All right, so I'm listening to all this, and I'm thinking, okay, this is really cool and sounds really exciting, and I'm already running my network with a mesh architecture because I have the second generation Eero.
Sure.
Andrew, as I recall, you do not have a mesh network set up for your place. Is that correct?
Yeah. If I had a bigger house, I probably would, though.
All right. So then this brings up the question that I have. Dave, for someone like Andrew, that's in a position where they're saying, well, if I had a bigger place, maybe I'd get mesh. Are there benefits for someone like Andrew to get a mesh set up now, even if their place may not be so big that it feels like it needs the extra coverage?
Sure. Yeah. So the answer is maybe, right? There's also the if it ain't broke, don't fix it philosophy, which is the first piece of advice I offer, right, to anyone, but also, for you, Andrew. That said, coverage is certainly the most popular reason to get mesh, but it's not the only reason to get mesh. What mesh also does is because it's providing multiple access points in your home, it means that there is more internal bandwidth available for your devices to use. And where that can be handy is if you're ever in a scenario where you've got two or even three devices or more in your home, say streaming from Netflix simultaneously, doing that all from one router, especially with Apple devices that don't support what's called MU-MIMO, multi-user MIMO, they don't support that tech. So your router really can only talk to one device at a time. If you've got three things streaming Netflix, you can wind up, even though you've got plenty of internet bandwidth available for it, you can wind up in a scenario in your home where your router has to work extra hard and maybe not be able to keep up. Range-wise, it's okay. Speed-wise, it might not be, because it's now trying to stream simultaneously to these, you know, three or more devices. And we know that it can't stream simultaneously, so it's constantly shifting its attention between them. In a scenario like that, setting up mesh, well, now your devices each can connect to a different mesh radio and really get that full streaming without, without it really impacting your coverage or anything like that. So again, if you're one person, you probably don't need that, but you might, you know, depending on what you're doing, So,
yeah, my network, generally speaking, is just me. And yet that's actually an important feature for me, because I'm often working on one thing while something else might be streaming or downloading, and I'm not having issues like I experienced before I had my mesh set up.
Yeah, there you go. If you've got a lot of devices stuttering to update. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, updating multiple devices at the same time. And yeah.
Well, and backing up too, right? If you're doing cloud backups from either your computers or from your iOS or, portable devices, mm-hmm. that is going to use bandwidth the same way streaming does. In fact, it will use more bandwidth than streaming does, and can also be an issue. And mesh really, again, having those multiple access points and having a system where they can intelligently sort of route you around really can help. So,
yeah, I'd forgotten about that. That was an issue that I had before. My various cloud backup things, everything getting clogged up because I've wanted to, say, stream something on Netflix while backups were happening, and everything was fighting over the Wi-Fi router, and it just went poorly.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, Andrew, so now you have something new to think about, don't you?
Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah. And sorry, they say I'm an expensive person to know, so there you go.
I have been told that as well. And although I have a feeling that you may be more expensive to know, at least right now, than I am.
Perhaps today. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So there's another thing that I wanted to talk about today, and this is a more speculation thing. So we've been hearing these reports that Apple is going to release new iPads this month, iPad Pro models this month. There's speculation that maybe there might be other products that could come out, maybe a new Mac or two. And we do know that we have the iPhone XR coming out on, is it the 19th? Is that right?
I think that is right. Yeah. So
what I'm wondering is, if Apple is releasing new products this month, do you think there will be a media event or not? And I'll start by saying, I think that there probably will be a media event, because there will be enough changes to the iPad Pro, if all the rumors are correct, to warrant that, because we'll probably also get the new Apple Pencil and maybe a new Mac announcement at the same time. Although that all of those things don't necessarily mean Apple has to do a media event. So Andrew, what do you think?
I think that they will have an event as well, because they could announce the iPads, the Pencil, maybe new AirPods. And I thought I also remember reading that they might be announcing the Texture news subscription thing. I don't know about that, though, but it could make sense.
Okay, Dave, how about you?
You know, there's certainly enough in the rumored pipeline, and I'll say well-supported rumored pipeline, that that would warrant an event. And you know, these new iPads, again, rumored new iPads, are different enough in form factor that it's not just, hey, here's this year's iPad, right, ready to go. I mean, the screens are really, the whole form of the thing is different, and potentially, you know, it's USB-C instead of Lightning, right? So they probably want to do some message control with that, as opposed to just letting it be a press release that appears on a random Tuesday morning.
But I like how you said message control.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Because
that's Apple's way.
That's Apple's way. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's we used to call it Steve's reality distortion field. But it's message control, right? We want you to look at this product the way we want you to look at it, not necessarily the way that you would look at it if you just consumed the information without us, you know, walking you through it. That said, you know, is the iPad important enough to the product line to warrant summoning the press and all that? I mean, I realize they, you know, they own the Steve Jobs Theater now, but, you know, they just had the press out a month ago. So do that again. Like, you got to pick and choose. Now, Apple has done one-on-one briefings in the past, right?
Where, that's true.
You know, and they've done it with Macs, right? So maybe this is a thing where they, you know, they pick a dozen or so people and go to where they are, as opposed to, you know, having to fly in hundreds of people or whatever it is. They go to where they are, walk them through it, you know, hole up in New York for a day of meetings, and, you know, can answer questions, and that way you're doing your briefings and all that stuff right there, and then giving these people, you know, not exclusives, but, you know, embargoes where they can post their, you know, their thoughts at the same time, and enticing people, controlling the message that way, right? That would work for iPads. Like, I don't think the world is going to stop and say, hey, what's Apple announcing? You know, what features of the new iPhone are they announcing that I care about today? So people aren't going to necessarily tune in to watch the stream, right? It's not as important an event publicly as the iPhone events tend to be. So, yeah, I think it's the private briefings thing, to be perfectly honest.
You know, as you say this, I'm inclined to agree, because there's enough truthiness to what you're saying.
Well, I can make it sound good.
Yeah, you made it sound good. I will say, though, if there's going to be a media event, I believe those invitations are going to go out early next week. So if we don't,
I agree.
So if we don't see those, there is no media event where we have Tim Cook on stage showing off new iPads. But that doesn't preclude what you're suggesting, Dave, which would be one-on-one briefings.
Yeah, and if those briefings, if that's the plan for this one, it wouldn't surprise me if they already happened, because, you know, Google had their event in New York this week. Apple would be wise to piggyback on that and meet with people that are already in New York. You know, if you read Daring Fireball, John Gruber said that he got a one-on-one briefing from Google, but he did not attend their event. He watched the video, reading between the lines. Why would he go there to New York for a hands-on, but not bother to attend the meeting unless he had another meeting? So, you know, I don't know.
I like this theory that you're weaving out of this one single thread.
Yeah. Oh, I'm definitely going far deeper than yeah. But you know me, I emotionally support all conspiracy theories. So
sure,
there you go.
And as you wove that tapestry together, I could hear the people as they're listening to the show going, "Oh,
yeah." But I could be. I mean, obviously, could be wrong. I I'm just weaving it together. And although I think I'm getting more and more on board with intellectually supporting this particular conspiracy theory.
So am I. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, that sounds pretty credible, I think.
Yeah, I'm really starting to enthusiastically enjoy the idea of the one-on-one briefings for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, we're out of time. We need to wrap up. Andrew, I'm so glad you were here today.
Me too. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Dave, thank you for being here as well and being such a fantastic data dump for us today.
My pleasure. Fun. Good stuff.
Yes, this was a lot of fun. Listeners, I am so glad you were here. Thank you for joining us. I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend, and we will see you again on Monday.